Right. Okay. And on that note, let us go, and other people, I'm sure, will trickle in. So this is the second of our webinars on mediation. And for those of you that don't know me, I am not Peter Beastie, as it says on my screen, but he holds the key to the kingdom in the Zoom account. So I come up as him, which is always interesting. I'm Adrienne Hardy. I'm a partner at MPM Legal. And as people may know, we are a boutique employment and business immigration firm, and we support a whole bunch of businesses with every type of issue relating to their employees. Just a bit of housekeeping to start with. Today's session is being recorded, and the recordings go up on our website and up on our Spotify channel. So if you are interested in listening to podcasts while walking the dog, driving the car, doing the cleaning, search for MPM Legal Employment Law 101, where you can also access our other episodes as well. As always, we're going to be very happy to answer questions, well, provided we actually know the answers. So please do put them in the Q&A function rather than the chat function. But of course, do chat and say hello if you want to do that. We don't turn cameras on. We won't be asking you to speak. So feel free to sit back or type away with any questions you've got, and we'll go from there. So this morning, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by my colleague, Michael Farrier, very experienced employment lawyer, but with a particular passion for mediation. He's an accredited mediator and has just returned from a very successful trip to the US, where I believe, Michael, you were presented with an award for your mediation work, which is very, very exciting. So morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, thanks. Yeah, the States every year where I go to help with the training were very complimentary this year and unexpectedly gave me a recognition award after 10 years of assisting training attorneys and retiring judges as the token Brit, if you like, across the pond, where I try and educate them in the ways of the English language, truly, as well as the ways of mediation.
Love it. And I said to you, didn't I? I said you're only given the award because of the accent.
Well, yes. Yeah. Anyone get what he said? What? What did he say? yeah. But it was a thrilling thing to get. And I think it demonstrates to me each year how the US are really light years ahead of us in terms of embedding mediation in their legal system, into the legal system over there, and also into their daily processes. And over here right now, we still ask people, are you interested in trying mediation in litigation? And I think that's a trick that is missed. Hopefully there may be some news from government that they're going to introduce compulsory mediation, but we can learn a lot from the US system, and I wish we would listen more closely, and we're not at the minute, but there we are. That's a debate for another day.
Yeah. Okay, so following on from last week's or the last session, what did we cover in last week's session, Michael? I wasn't around for that one. Just give us a quick summary.
Yes, in the last session, the first in the series, this is a mini series on mediation and how it can assist business in conflict resolution. We covered a general session on what is mediation and what does the mediation process look like, and how it might be useful. So following on from that, we're looking now this morning, perhaps more dryly, at measuring conflict costs. And the idea is to get into a discussion about the cost that should be measured, how you can do so, and why you should do it. In essence, it's to better inform us about what are we spending on our conflict costs, both express and implied or hidden costs, to see if there's a better way to help business avoid those costs going forward, and also the grief of grievances, disciplinaries, PIPs, etc.
Yeah. And I think that's obviously going to be completely critical now when, you know, we're in times are a little bit tough and businesses are having to look very carefully at what they're spending. So, So, why should, you know, what you know, if, how are costs measured? Why should businesses be looking at measuring their costs?
I think for me, it's all to do with budgeting. How can you be certain of next year's budget or how you're doing in comparison to previous year's conflicts unless you know what those typical costs are? And every business will have different ways of measuring cost centers. What's right for them may not be right for others. But if you look at some key components in the makeup of those conflict costs, you can get a rough idea in comparing with previous years whether you're having more issues or lesser issues. But unless you look at the costs, because the world is so immediate and moving on so quickly, I think you simply are surrounded by who you're surrounded by in terms of work and pressures, et cetera, that you don't stand back as an HR leader and say, well, how are we doing this year?
So what do we talk about? What are we talking about when we're talking about measuring conflict costs? What should we be measuring? I mean, I know clients say to me, how much will it cost to get rid of somebody?
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the immediate costs. But what are we talking about? Break it down for us.
We've got hard and soft costs is the way I categorize them. Firstly, the hard costs are pretty easy to understand. They're external legal costs in supporting you on a grievance or an internal process and an external process like litigation. You may have then on top of that compensation costs, damages costs, other hard costs that you should bear in mind and look at and see trends against: sickness days, hard costs, permanent health insurance, claims costs, ongoing situations, exit interview for reasons, and any costs that are highlighted by those leaving that may have a reason connected to the conflicts and the management of them. They're the hard costs in core terms. The soft costs, the indirect costs, are more difficult to measure, and you're not really ever going to get to a precise figure. But those costs shouldn't be ignored, and they will really inform the business internally the type of costs you're looking at just to handle a grievance. So they would be business time or leadership time spent on managing a situation, investigating it, hearing the appeal. HR costs, investigation time, business partnering support time, meeting support time, appeal investigation, appeal meeting time, internal legal costs, if you have an internal legal service covering these types of issues.
You've got lost productivity as well, haven't you? Because you talked about investigations there. So, you know, you might have HR investigating something, but they're going to be interviewing people. That's a couple of hours potentially, you know, and all that time while they're being interviewed, they're not doing their job. So things fall behind. So
yes, and you've got lower morale costs. How do you measure those?
Yeah.
You know, often these team, if a conflict's arisen between employees in a team, and it's overflowed into the team and its outlook, that's likely to hit motivation levels, engagement levels, happiness levels,
performance,
those considerations.
Yeah.
Very difficult to measure the impact of a situation on those sort of qualities or those factors, those considerations. Then you've got the sort of impact of performance capability processes. So a specific process, how do you measure the impact of that formality, that formal process on the individuals involved? You've got the manager, maybe his line manager overseeing it, drawing the battle lines and being convinced that they have to prove underperformance for their own credibility purposes. Then you've got the employee involved and any supporting HR member as well. The poor employee struggling to prove that he is worthy of the job. So different processes can bring in different costs or bigger element, bigger sort of a wider cost of the same item. And it can inform. I looked at a formula that I created about 6 years ago by measuring employee cost, HR cost, business cost, adding notional values to them on a daily basis of their involvement. I got to a figure of £16,000, including £2,000 estimated legal costs, for investigating and completing an internal grievance process.
Where I
attributed two parties, the aggrieved and the accused, if I can call them that, a couple of HRBPs involved in each stage of the process, first stage and appeal stage, before I looked at the fallout costs for the result or the outcome. But if you keep that figure in mind of say 15,000 for a straightforward grievance to cover time costs and external legal costs, if you then ask, well, what would it have cost comparably to ask the parties to try mediation before we went to investigate the matter? A typical day's mediation costs would range between £1,500 and £2,000 plus the tax, plus any venue costs if it's in person. If it's online, of course, there won't be any venue costs. So you could be looking at a typical pattern of 10 to 20% mediation costs as a fraction of your total conflict costs otherwise.
Mm.
When it gets into litigation, that proportion sinks in terms of the mediation input.
Investment.
So to me, there's no business case credible against measuring your costs or against trying mediation. But maybe those on the session would think, well, you would say that you're passionate about it.
But if we're just looking at sort of pounds and pence here, it's, you know, you're making quite a good case for it, although I'm slightly disturbed by the fact that we're looking at reducing legal spend. But there we go. That would be my different angle. But you're absolutely right. If it is going to save time and money, then it's got to be something that's worth thinking about. And as you say, litigation is massively expensive. And I often say to a lot of my clients, look, think carefully about before you defend anything on principle, because in actual fact, most of the time, the only winners are the lawyers. So to that extent, absolutely, you know, this is useful. Yeah.
Yes, I'm not so concerned about the loss of fees, of course, because I think it's much more important to give a good service to clients.
Absolutely.
And achieve the right measured outcome for them.
Yeah. I'm only saying that if Mark's listening.
Yeah. Yes. Good point. Oh, I forgot about that. But seriously, there is an opportunity to look at mediation as an alternative tool in the toolkit.
Yeah.
And what to use before you roll out the grievance policy or the disciplinary policy or the PIP policy. Think about, is there a better way of dealing with this before you embrace it? Because then once you get sucked into the process, it's just ongoing and who knows where it can end sometimes.
So how successful is mediation then? And how would you measure its success valuably?
That is down to, again, probably a number of difficult to measure costs. And essentially speaking, at the end of a mediation, the measure of success is with the parties themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If they've been able to find a way of working together again, of getting past their difficulties and agreeing a roadmap for the future, then that's a huge success. That should re-motivate them, should re-energize them, should allow any sickness days to reduce or collapse that are directly involved, should allow team morale to climb again, and productivity too. So again, in reverse, all those qualities we've touched upon already, you can look to see, well, has this really helped the situation? Now, here's an example of one I did a couple of years back for a law firm involving a conveyancing team. A conveyancing team, about five people in it, each was responsible for a certain stage in the conveyancing process. And they'd just fallen out of shape with each other. They got lost and they'd had some crosswords and they'd sort of bent themselves out of shape as a team. And that was hampering the client service levels and the outputs and the ability to meet the deliverable deadlines, which conveyancing is known for.
Mm.
So after about 6 weeks of individual meetings and a couple of team meetings and back to work meeting, we were able to reconnect those individuals to find how they could work successfully together and understand again that actually this falling out, if you like, was not permanent. It was just an incidental thing. They fixed it. They got back to work. And instantly, all their colleagues in the open plan office were saying, what is the conveyancing team taking? Can I have some of that? Because there was a notable impact, if you like, on outputs and morale. And the managing partner called me and said, whatever you did, it's working. We need to talk about how we can help this type of coaching, type of management in other groups, because it's just told me that actually a team will sometimes fall out of love with each other, fall out of shape with each other. And just sitting them down free from the office place and getting them to talk about the issues and how they want to fix things and what's important to them can actually just realign people. So that's a good example of how you could say that definitely worked in that case. I tend to follow up mediation days. So I'll do a follow up with the parties individually, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months and 12 months. Just checking in with them to see how their agreement, their roadmap is working for them. Have they had any repeat issues and how have they got past them if they have? I might then talk to HR about feedback from the team since this mediation session. And they will normally have a better handle on how the morale in the team is going, how productivity is going, how the manager of the team has reacted post-mediation to what they're seeing. Sometimes it's more enlightening, there's more evidence, but mostly it's confidential and it's low key. But essentially, the way you would typically manage a team in terms of its outputs and deliverables, you can use those same measures to see how things are post-mediation.
Yeah.
And certainly if you're looking at a law firm, it's very easy to measure outputs because of lawyers being pretty much measured against time inputs and chargeable time or litigation results, settlements or whatever. You've got some hardcore measurables that you can look to see how they're comparing pre and post-mediation. Yeah. So what works for you, look to see how you would measure people anyway, and then take a look at them after a session on mediation to see if they've improved at all.
And presumably you can look at things like whether, you know, people are leaving, so retention figures, et cetera, you know, performance reviews, like you said, a number of different things. Yeah.
Every case will have its own set of absolutely variables. So it's good to look at a case on that basis, right? This is specific. Where can we measure it beforehand and afterwards?
Yeah.
But also you can look at your budgets. Because if a case doesn't settle in mediation, for example, it might still break the back of the conflict so that the issue or the conflict is less and it requires less time or less legal costs and any litigation claim is simpler than it otherwise might have been.
Yeah.
But certainly you're looking at number of tribunal claims at the tough end, at the sharp end, number of claims, type of claims, incidents of grievances, performance improvement plans, numbers previously compared to numbers post mediation or training of the management team on how to manage performance properly. And as an aside, and I touched on this last time, I think I was saying to a future client yesterday, the performance management tool, a PIP tool, is alien to me. I don't see how business can expect anyone to improve their output, their productivity, if they're threatened with their very employment.
Yeah, no, it's a good point.
If you improve, we're going to sack you. Is that really a modern tool for the modern business?
Do you want to talk to the employment tribunals about that? Because, you know, a number of times I've heard employers say exactly the same thing. Essentially, you mentioned PIP and everyone goes, you're trying to force me out, you know, yeah. and then off the back of that comes a bullying complaint, the manager's micromanaging me. Yeah. It just descends into a mire of conflict, doesn't it? Essentially.
Yes. I've used mediation, workplace mediation tools, mostly in performance management situations.
Yeah.
Where I've got the manager and the employee talk to me separately and then come together in a room together. And I'm therefore, I'm there as the referee, if you like, and I say to the manager, in sort of just summarizing terms, paraphrasing terms, right, manager, tell the employee, your colleague here, what success looks like. What standards are you expecting? What yeah. are the top benchmarks? Tell them. Employee, did you understand that? And that moment where they come together and they reset their relationship as manager-employee, where perhaps they're involved in a formal PIP or they're about to go into one, is very empowering because they come as equals and they sort out what they need to do. And it will flush out if it's savable as a situation. Mostly these situations turn around. The manager realizes actually the communication wasn't good from his,
right.
his viewpoint. He needs to step up on the outputs in terms of communication, what's needed, when he needs it by, etc. And the employee feels more empowered and trusted because the manager is sharing more with them about what's needed.
I do think that happens quite often, doesn't it? The communication is something that is, it's that classic phrase, it's got lost in communication. And I guess that's where, you know, a softer approach in a mediation can often help because you're checking the understanding of both people. Whereas, you know, I mean, I've seen PIP processes run where, you know, the employee walks out of the PIP meeting with a plan in hand. You know, you must do this by deadline. And they're like, I don't really understand where I'm going wrong, or I don't understand what it is I have to do. And, you know, immediately then that's not a good place to start.
And you just get this misconnection.
Yeah.
You get the trouble that obviously will follow. But in terms of how you measure performance management situations, I think that's a relatively more tangible arena than, say, behaviors, because you can look at the outputs, you can look at in whatever way you measure the efficiency or productivity of an employee in your organization, you can apply the same metrics to them to see how they're doing after a session on mediation.
Yeah.
And I would say this, if you can tell I'm passionate about this, but I think if you look at your policies, your conflict policies, and you interject mediation before grievance, disciplinary, and PIPs, you will save yourself a lot of time spent on those processes, those black and white processes. You will have better communication. You will engender long-term improved communication between managers and teams. Yeah. And it will become embedded in the organization as one of your values. It can be very powerful if it's used in the right way. So.
Yeah,
you do look at your costs, your budgets, your tribunal numbers. Are you just going through the motions with these processes? What are you doing that's going to make a real difference to stop those numbers climbing or just turning out the same each year? And ask yourself this with any conflict, will it matter in 6 months? If it does, then maybe it does need a formal intervention by the business. So you can't avoid litigation because you need to stand up for how you've behaved and how you've managed a situation. That's always understood. But in most cases, grievances and grievance processes will not matter in 6 months in terms of the business, but it might matter to the employee who's still feeling aggrieved and bent out of shape because the business didn't listen to him.
Yeah. Here might be a good time to bring in a question, a really good question that's been asked. I'll just read it out. So if you go to litigation, there's a process whereby all of the relevant information from both sides is shared with the other side. So we all know there should be no surprises in litigation. How do we ensure that all the relevant information is made available before a mediation session? Because it might be that there's a lack of trust that one side is threatening litigation in order to get access to the documentation slash evidence. So what are, you know, I think there's quite a few bits in there to unpick, aren't there? I mean, I suppose my first point, my first thought on that, and I'd be interested to see what you think is, you know, if there's threatened litigation, then arguably the mediation process has come in at too late a stage if it's got to that point. But, you know, what I suppose, what's your thoughts on that? And what's your thoughts on what information is needed? What's shared between the parties to ensure that there's essentially a level playing field when you're talking about mediation?
I think let's just break down the type of conflicts we're talking about here. Where you've got individual to individual conflict, like a behavioural or relationship based conflict, you don't need documents to mediate. It's normally an interrelationship issue, a personal issue that can be fully ventilated by the parties sharing with me and with each other in the session jointly what the issues are and how they want to get around them. When it comes to a conflict between an employee and the organization, so for example, maybe a behavioral conflict that is grounded in bullying or discrimination otherwise, that it makes its way into litigation during the employment relationship. Again, it'll probably be, in my experience, my case experience, more about relationship and behaviors than about hard evidence otherwise. It's only where you get really involved litigation, particularly in the civil courts, business to business conflicts, that you may want some disclosure before you get to mediation. Now, some litigators will tell you, you should never mediate before you've completed disclosure or discovery.
Right.
I think that in general is nonsense. If parties want to sit down and talk about their issue, they should be allowed to do so and encouraged to do so at any time.
Yeah.
Because the sooner they start talking, the lesser the conflict and the more likely an outcome will be that avoids litigation. But in the process of mediation, if I'm acting as a mediator in a civil dispute between businesses, I will invite the parties, in fact, encourage them to let me have confidential mediation statements.
Right.
When they tell me everything they want to tell me about it, including sending me any documents they think are important for their claim or their position in the conflict. So in the United States, for example, I co-mediated one session this year, and that involved a family dispute in a divorce situation. And the mediator there was sent pre-mediation statements by each party's attorney or lawyer, which talked about what they were hoping to achieve, their priorities, their financial situation, their financial futures in terms of jobs, availability for the wife who was having to go back to work, the ability to raise money on finance to buy out the husband post-divorce. So that was evidence that helped the process of discussion that was shared voluntarily through invitation ahead of the session. And although you can't, there's no hard and fast rule in mediation, civil or workplace or any other type, with regard to the disclosure of documents, the mediation discussion will only be as good as the sharing of documents and priorities is beforehand. And I would encourage everyone in mediation to share as much as they want to with the mediator ahead of the day, because it saves time on the day and the mediator is better prepared. The mediator will know exactly what the issues are between the parties and can start thinking about, well, what would settlement look like? Is there a better informed or a more easily informed method of finding a solution?
Well, I think probably in the employee space, you know, when you're talking about behaviours, it's, you know, both sides are going to be keen to prove their case. But I guess it's the point is that you're not sitting in judgment. You're not there to make a decision. So it's not a case of give me the evidence and I'll find one way or the other. It's a case of, you know, an employee might say, I find it really overwhelming and bullying when my manager sends me emails after hours, which are short, and they, you know, there's none of this, you know, hi, don't worry about it, you can look at this in the morning type stuff. So it's less about the evidence and more about people sharing their feelings, their reactions, and establishing a way of working, isn't it? Yeah.
every case on its merits. Some will be, so for example, a mediation involving a salesperson in a underperformance situation. It might be useful to share in the mediation the sales figures of the individual and the trend, but that's only part of the story, that's the history.
Yeah.
Mediation is forward looking, right? How do we avoid the problem now? How can we solve it now? And what does it look like in the future? How can we avoid the same situation arising again? So evidence of what's happened is less important in mediation, but central to a judge making a decision or an arbitrator making a decision. The mediator, as you say, is a neutral. He's not there to advise, make a decision, judge, arbitrate, or make any finding of fact. He's there really just to help the parties come to their own solution. Yeah. So just to summarize, I would not allow disclosure to stand in the way of your interest in mediating. And any lawyer that tells you you need to disclose first and get mostly all the way to trial is perhaps influenced by the question of fees,
or is mired in just being a litigator for too long. Yes, potentially. And,
ADR, does it actually mean an alarming drop in revenue for lawyers? I think actually if you get the reputation much more widely of being a solutions provider and you tailor your solution to each conflict that your client gives you to look at,
you're
going to be more in demand than ever before from your clients.
Yeah.
I'm just known as a lawyer who goes through the motions and has this black and white approach to when you can talk to each other about it in a way to try and find a solution.
Yeah.
So I'm not one of those mediators who believes in that stuff at all.
No.
If you want to talk to the person you're having a conflict with, up
talk
to you.
To them.
Yeah, do it now.
Yeah. Right. Well, we're that has absolutely whizzed by. It's absolutely flown by. So thanks ever so much for talking about the sort of the impact of costs and where mediation can help. So I think, Michael, you're happy for people to get in touch with you to talk about doing a measurement analysis in relation to conflict costs. So if anyone out there is interested, do reach out to Michael. We've got the next in our mediation series is on the 7th of August at 11 a.m. Mediation at work, sort of understanding mediation and practice, and no doubt we'll follow on from some of the themes that we talked about today. If you're lucky enough to be away on holiday at that time, then that's no problem, because don't forget our recordings are available on our website and also on our Spotify channel. So thank you ever so much, everybody, this morning. I hope you enjoyed your coffee half hour, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks, Michael.
Yes, thanks everyone. Thanks, Adrian. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.